I always throw in the towel a little early, and after trying all this, I'm just throwing in the towel for the whole set. Like, literally, I'm just going to play a card at the pre-release and just say, it's this one. And they're going to go, what's that one? I'm like, I'm not saying it. You could say it.
I'll just handle this section. I'll say all of them once, too, but we're just going to need to say the cards more and play with them and ask the listeners for help. I'll do a poll on Twitter.
I have a good idea. You say them, and then I say them, and then I could put the audio together into the melange of chaos in awfulness.
Not sure that would work, but we could try. Welcome to episode number 75 of the Memory Jar, 75 episodes. As always, we are here to remember the cards, the decks, the people, and the stories that make Magic the game we love. I'm David Preston, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Christian Wright. Christian, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Since our last episode, I've been practicing moving and shuffling cards silently for the upcoming Neon Dynasty pre-release.
I mean, we went over this last week, and we agree that nobody has ever referred to you as doing anything like a ninja. It sounds like you're doing ninja practice. So if you've been practicing for a week, do you think you're there?
Oh, no. No. At least I can look intimidating while I'm shuffling a deck of cards. So they could put that on my grave. He lived a long life and never faced him at a casino. That's going to be the epitaph.
All right. Well, as Christian mentioned, he is prepping for the Neon Dynasty pre-release. I am thinking about the Neon Dynasty pre-release. We're recording this right before the pre-release, and this will be out just afterwards. So as you may expect, we're here to talk about the facts of Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. Christian and I will be doing our usual rundown of facts and cards of interest in Neon Dynasty that you will not get anywhere else. But before we do that, let us crack open the memory jar. All right. The random card button on Scryfall has given us Jeering Instigator. This is a rare from Khans of Tarkir. It's one and a red for a 2/1 goblin rogue. It has morph for two and a red, which means you can cast this card face down as a 2/2 creature for three generic mana, and then you turn it face up for its morph cost. When it is turned face up, if it's your turn, you gain control of another target creature till end of turn, you untap it, and it gains haste until end of turn. So this is a threatened effect on a creature.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about how there's a lot of staples Wizards play design uses in their grab bag of design tricks, and one of them is the threaten with a set mechanic, and this is a threaten with a set mechanic, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So in Neon Dynasty, we've seen a saga with threaten as the first step. In Crimson Vow, there was Bloody Betrayal, which was a threaten that gave you a blood token, and so this is kind of like that. It's just the set mechanic they were concerned with here was morph. We've seen that before. It makes me think of Eldrazi Obligator from Oath of the Gatewatch, a 3/1 creature, but you could pay one and a colorless. The creature itself had devoid since colorless was the theme to get an additional threat. This was like a fine card. I'm not sure if I ever played it because redless was my favorite deck in the cons format. I'd just play all of the other colors and skip out on red.
My strategy was to take Trilands until I couldn't take Trilands, and then maybe take a dual land, like one of the gain life dual lands, and then I would pick good cards from there. So I actually never remember playing this card. Like, okay. In fact, when we saw it, I don't remember even seeing it.
I do remember the first time I read this card. It took me a second to understand that it only worked on my turn, because if this was an instant speed flip up, it would be out of control. That being said, it just didn't see a lot of play. I did see the occasional one of in a sideboard. Mostly as a tempo play, there were some of those Jeskai tempo decks that would throw this into the sideboard. Or I think even there were some Gruul decks that were like, in the mirror, they're going to play some one big thing and I'm going to steal it with this. And it's not a popular commander card either. I've seen it in Animar decks when they're doing the morph thing, since all the morphs become free with Animar and it's teamer and there's a lot of teamer morph stuff. But yeah, not much to say about this card. It's just a threaten on a 2/1.
Yeah, it's a goblin.
It is a goblin. Goblin rogue. All right, well, good enough. Let's move on to the main show. So Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. This is our fact show, as I mentioned, where we talk about the story, some cards, the mechanics, the themes, returning things, weird minutiae, and of course, the Secret Reach card and the tongue twister for the set. I want to take a little bit of the story this time. I know you're the podcast Vorthos, but I read the whole thing, so I can talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it together. I think this was a fantastic story for what it's worth.
So the story starts with Kaido Shizuki. He's a brand new planeswalker. He's a ninja. And he's on a quest to find his old friend, the Emperor of Kamigawa. And she disappeared when they were children. So Since that time, Kamigawa has been kind of on the edge of chaos. They're the Imperials in the palace who are running the place, but they're facing resistance from the futurists who embrace technology and these other various factions that are kind of outside of the palace.
We learn through the first couple stories that Kaido has a sister whose name is escaping me, unfortunately, because she doesn't have a legendary card. But they confer, and he finds out that his best friend and comrade, Tamishi, is betraying him. So when Kaido tries to confront him, he finds out he's dead. Who killed him? Well, it's our good old friend, the Phyrexian Praetor, Jin Gataxis.
Yeah, that's a problem. Tamishi had created this reality chip, this cool technology for Tezzeret and Jin Gataxis. And the reality chip is really the MacGuffin for the Neon Dynasty story. Like, what does it do? It doesn't matter. It's the MacGuffin. Yay. Anyway, Kaido steals that. Then we move on.
He runs into Tamio. Tamio is like, I don't know what this is, but I'll help you. They try to track Jin Gataxis and Tezzeret down. There's some sleuthing. And they get stuck in a corner, and then they get saved by, drumroll please, the Wanderer, who we saw in War of the Spark. We're all wondering what the Wanderer was. Now we know.
Yeah, she was the Emperor of Kamigawa. She hit her spark due to some shenanigans with the Kami, and it's unstable. So she's been bouncing back and forth between all of these different planes. So as Kaito, who's been planeswalking and looking for her, has been like on her trail, he's never caught up to her. She catches up to him here. She gets to come back to Kamigawa. So she saves them. They figure out that Jin Gataxis and Tezzeret have been torturing Kami for mysterious reasons. We don't know why. The Wanderer basically cuts Jin Gataxis almost in half, and then Tamio and Kaido capture Tezzeret to question him. But, dun-dun-dun, at the same time, they find out that rebels are now attacking Iganjo Castle and are threatening to overthrow the Imperials, aka the elites that run Kamigawa. So they're like, oh no, we gotta get to the castle. So the Wanderer like planeswalks there, and then Tamio and Kaito like get on a big mech and they like clump their way to the palace.
They fight the rebels. It's close. The rebels are like, ah, and then turns out that they saved the day, but they completely forgot about Tamio and Tezzeret. Tamio turns out she can't pilot a mech and subdue Tezzeret at the same time. So she ends up getting captured by Tezzeret.
And he takes her, planeswalks away with her. And then in the epilogue, we found out Jin Gataxis, though basically cut in half, is alive. And he's back in Phyrexia. And he has completed, that's completed with an A, Tamio. So Tamio is now a loyal Phyrexian. And we learn this whole thing was basically about making a Phyrexian planeswalker. And they leave us with a cliffhanger that Tamio is kind of like looking at her scrolls. And as you may remember from earlier story, one of those scrolls is the one that trapped Emrakul in the moon. And so the implication is like, oh man, is she going to open one of these like three scrolls she has that's really terrible and powerful and maybe release Emrakul or who knows what? So it's kind of sucks they did this to Tamio because she's like the mom and has all these kids and everything and is like this great figure. But now she's a loyal Phyrexian and it's a whole problem. We're going to probably see some other Phyrexian planeswalkers in the story coming up. And this is what the Praetors have been up to. We saw Vorinclex in Kaldheim and now we've seen Jin Gataxis. Elish Norn is mentioned in the story. So we're going to continue this thing and it's presumably sometime, I'm guessing in 2023, going to give us like this planeswalkers fight the Phyrexians or something. My prediction is they go and they're like, we're going to lose. We need to get help from the one person we don't want to help us. And they like take Nicol Bolas out of the meditation realm and then he tries to help them.
Absolutely. I also think that them trying to use Eldrazi is going to backfire because there's going to be some cool retcon reason that Eldrazi can't be Phyrexianized and so it's going to backfire, but they still manage to get away. Eldrazi are released upon the multiverse again.
We could be doing a lot of stuff here. It's interesting. So that's a lot of story. If you just skipped all that because you want to read the story, go to the Wizards website. It's a lot better this time than it has been. It was consistent. They gave us five full stories and then a bunch of these little side stories. It was pretty nice.
Yeah, it was actually really good. Like, it's the best story they have in a while. And it might not be because I just kind of assumed the Kaldheim and Strixhaven stories are bad after I read one story of them. But, you know, I stuck through with it this time.
You're a terrible podcast Vorthos. It's like, you have one job. Okay, you actually have a bunch of jobs. But one of your jobs is like, Christian, what's in the story? And you're like, I don't know. I didn't really read them. So this time, at least, we tag teamed and got the whole thing done. That was nice.
Because they haven't been good.
Okay, well, you know, can't all be gold. Speaking of things that can't always be gold, let's talk about returning mechanics. So first of all, we have Channel. It's back originally from Saviors of Kamigawa. There it was only on spirits. There were a common cycle and an uncommon cycle and then two rares. And it was really, really underwhelming. But it looks in this set like they figured it out. So channel is kind of like cycling, except instead of discarding the card to draw a card, you pay the channel cost and you discard it for some kind of spell effect. So in Neon Dynasty, it's on 23 cards across all colors but black, though there is a land that taps for black and has a channel effect, but it just makes them really interesting modal cards.
I was wrong. This is not really complicated. I said that in a previous show. But it's nice because one of the things that is a problem with Magic cards in general is that you may not necessarily want to have the first couple of copies because it's early in the game and they're just dead cards. But Channel kind of solves that problem in that it gives you something to do with these cards until you can cast them if you want. Perfect example, Greater Tanuki. It's 4 green-green for an enchantment creature dog. It's a 6/5 trampler, but it has Channel 2 green where you can discard Greater Tanuki and essentially Rampant Growth. So you search your library for a basic land card and put it on the battlefield tapped. That's great because you're not going to be able to cast a 6-mana spell on the first few turns of the game, but at least you can use it to ramp to bigger stuff. It's just that type of design that is actually a lot more elegant than I kind of realized when I was bashing Channel.
Yeah, that card's a great example. It reminds me a lot of Croson Tusker, which was 5 green-green for a 6/5, very similar. It had cycling for 2 and a green, but when you cycle it, you also get to search for a basic and put on the battlefield. No, actually, that one you just put in your hand. But it's like, if you can't cast the 7-mana 6/5, then great, the card isn't dead in your hand. You can go get a land, you can draw a card, whatever. And Greater Tanuki has that same effect.
Right. And I think the distinction between channel and cycling is that you almost always want to cycle if it has an effect. I don't think I've seen a Croson Tusker ever hard cast in my life. Whereas Greater Tanuki does have that tension in it. Do you ramp with it or do you wait to cast it? Because a 6/5 trampler is pretty good. So it makes games a little more interesting in that regard. Whereas, yeah, I auto cycle to Croson Tusker every single time.
You can't put 5 Colossal Dreadmaws into your deck, but you could put 5 Greater Tanukis into your deck if you want to, because if you draw the first couple and you don't have 6 mana yet, well, congratulations, you get to pull a basic out of your deck and ramp to the rest of them. That being said, I would put 5 Colossal Dreadmaws in my deck. I just don't follow
the
example. I'm shameful. Yeah.
100%. 6/6 Trampler, yeah.
Our next one is Ninjutsu, and I just want to point out that it is Ninjutsu. That is a U between the J and the T, not Ninjutsu. I did not notice that until looking at the cards in this set. And then I went back and looked at the earlier cards and I was like, wait, they were also Ninjutsu? And nobody has ever mentioned this? Or this is like a Mandela effect, Berenstain Bears situation, but no, it's always been Ninjutsu. So we'll try to get that right from now on.
Look, it was the Berenstain Bears when I was growing up, and it was Ninjutsu. I'm not going to change my opinion on this. Just because you point out facts and reality doesn't mean I have to stand for it. That actually, when I read that in our show notes, listeners, I took 20 minutes and was actually shook. Like, people say that as like for an effect, but literally I had to sit at my desk and just be like, wow, I was so wrong about this world. The fundamental tenets of how I've lived might have to change because I was wrong about Ninjutsu.
And here
anyway,
we are.
Ninjutsu. This is going to be hard. I apologize. Ninjutsu was originally from Betrayers of Kamigawa. There was a handful of blue and black Ninjutsu creatures. They included some since then in supplemental sets such as Plane Chase and some Commander sets and Modern Horizons, I should add. But Neon Dynasty is their return to a standard legal set, which is well welcomed, and everyone's been kind of hyped for ninjas to come back.
Yeah, it's a mechanic I love. And the interesting thing here is that Neon Dynasty gives us a vertical cycle of green ninjas that a common, uncommon, and a rare. And then we also have one in white at uncommon.
Why not?
Pretty sweet. Still no red. Not sneaky enough. They're just banging on pots and pans and running into the battle, barbarians and whatnot. But yeah, that's right. Clomping around.
I'm a red ninja. That's been proven.
Sagas are back. Same as always. These have been around for a while. They get a lore counter when they enter, and then one after your draw step on every turn. The difference between normal sagas and these is these exile and come back transformed as a creature, which is new. I was interested in why they exile and come back instead of just be transformed. And so I went to the source, Gavin Verhey, who talked about this in a video, and he said that during playtesting, there was a lot of confusion about being able to attack with the creatures right away when they didn't exile. People just wouldn't do it, thinking that they couldn't attack with them. So this clears that up. And they also did it for balance reasons. Previously, when people would get them out early and then they would flip into the creature on curve, they had to kind of turn the numbers down and tune them, and the cards just didn't end up being appealing enough. So now they exile and transform. So there are some red ones that actually come in and the creature has haste, so those get to attack, but the other ones will have to wait an additional turn. I don't know, kind of cool to have the creature on the back.
Yeah, it makes sense. I like the twist. You know, hopefully they can add more twists to these, like maybe make them turn into, I don't know, artifacts on the back or another saga that goes back and forth between the two when that exiles. I think the world's their oyster now that they've kind of cracked that puzzle for how to increase the design space for sagas.
I like that these are very flavorful too. They're all throwbacks to things that we know from the original block, which has that Dominaria feel. It's looking back at these things from the past as we're telling these stories again. Christian, one of your favorites is back Shrines. We have a new cycle of Shrines.
I'm excited.
These are very different. The previous cycles triggered during upkeep in Champions of Kamigawa. Then the Core 2021 Shrines triggered at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase. The twists are multiple here. They're now creatures, and they have triggered abilities that trigger at the beginning of the end step that also cost one generic mana to get the effect. So if you were to build a Shrine deck across all formats, you would really just be getting triggers at all parts of your turn. I'm waiting for those that trigger in combat next time.
Just too many. Too many triggers. We've probably gone overboard on the triggers. I like that there's a card that makes Shrine tokens that's in the Commander set, but it kind of begs a question. We've heard from Morrow that Shrines aren't a creature type, yet there is a legal Magic card in a legal Magic format that can make Shrine tokens. So are they just creatures without any types, but they also happen to be Shrines? It's kind of confusing.
Yeah, it is puzzling. I think the reason they're not doing Shrine as a creature type is because Changelings would be busted in any Shrine deck. It's just like every one of your creatures, everything is a Shrine. So Shrine modifies the enchantment, but not the creature. And that does mean, as far as I can tell, there are no creature types. All of these are just Nameless Race from the Dark over again. We now have a bunch of new creatures that don't actually have types.
So I pity the poor person playing a meme Shrine deck, and I'm pitying their opponent, really. They're playing a meme Shrine deck in Legacy. Their opponent's like, I don't know what to do, but I'm going to play this Plague Engineer. I'm going to remain Shrine. And they say, that's not a legal creature type. You're going to have to pick something else.
Our last returning mechanic is Vehicles and Crew. It's not really a returning mechanic. It's just worth noting here, because though we get these all the time, they're a full-on theme here. And it's really the first time since they arrived in the Kaladesh block that we have seen vehicles as something that really matters.
Well, because they're all mechs. That's why it matters.
Yeah. Well, and ninja bikes, and there's all kinds of different stuff going on here for vehicles. But we had a lot of ships in the Ixalan block, but it wasn't like there were a bunch of other cards that cared about vehicles. And here they definitely matter.
I mean, this is basically Kamigawa Gundam Wing. So not a fan personally, but some people are. Don't begrudge you. They're big giant robots, and I'm glad we're getting some big giant robots in the set.
We will see how it goes. We're just shooting back to old sets and mechs and things that people don't remember.
Yes, this is the second set, Magic set with mechs, listeners. Second block, if we're being technically correct. Let's talk about new mechanics. So we have a few new mechanics, right? Let's start with the very niche and narrow one that's on one beloved Planeswalker, and that's Completed. So tell us about Completed, David.
Yeah, Completed is a replacement effect that exists on Planeswalkers that have Completed. And Tamiyo has a hybrid Phyrexian mana, which is the first we've ever seen that. It's a Simic with Phyrexian symbols, and so you can pay it either with green, blue, or two life. And Completed says if life was paid for that cost, the Planeswalker enters with two fewer loyalty counters. And so if you're getting it a turn early, it comes in a little smaller. And this absolutely indicates we're going to get more Planeswalkers. They're not making a mechanic for one Phyrexian Planeswalker.
No. So what's your speculation about who's going to get Completed? Or I guess a better question is, which Planeswalker do you want to see Completed?
That's a good question. Both questions, actually. I'm a little worried that Koth is going to show up already Completed when we see him. Ooh. That'd be sad. I don't know. I don't really want to see any of them Completed.
I would like to see Jace Completed. He deserves it.
Okay, I take it back, Jace. Complete him.
I think the most tragic completion would be Ajani, because Ajani and Tamiyo have been close, as shown in previous stories. And it'd be sad. It would actually be one of the few Planeswalkers that actually be legitimately sad seeing Completed, because Ajani has one of the few good Planeswalker stories. It'd be another tragic chapter in his saga.
If they complete Angraff so he can't hang out with his daughters, I'm going to riot.
No, I'm going to quit magic. That's messed up.
All right. You heard it here first, wizards. You'll lose us. Don't do it. Another new mechanic we have is modified. This is a keyword term for a creature that is equipped, enchanted by an aura that you control or has a counter on it. There are a couple things in here worth mentioning. That means, like, if your opponent puts pacifism on your creature, it's not modified. You don't control the aura. And the second, it can be any counter on the creature. So it can be +1/+1, a charge counter, an ability counter, whatever counter it is. And there are some creatures in the set with ability counters. We'll talk about that later.
Good friend of the podcast, Alex Smith, who does work for Wizards of the Coast, he managed to get a playtest card in the Magic Convention edition called Lokvac that is essentially the modified mechanic and does stuff with counters on other creatures and on your own creatures. So that was the first time we saw it in paper in any sort of form. This is the first time we've seen it in a legal magic set of any sort, mm-hmm. which is really nice. And honestly, I think they can make this evergreen. This is kind of a pretty easy low bar for adding this into different sets because it's really easy to describe what modified is and it can apply to so many different types of mechanics.
I thought it was interesting too. Alex tweeted when the modified keyword was spoiled that they had already apparently been working on something like that when he came up with the ability for Luvok. And so the abilities are a little bit different. On the playtest card, it says modified creatures have a power or toughness or ability that's different than their printed version. So this is a little more narrow because it requires those three things, not just that something has changed about them. But yeah, really cool. I wonder if Luvok will get some errata that says also modified means this. I hope we're errating playtest cards.
Let's just aggressively tweet at Gavin until they do it.
Our final one here is reconfigure. Creatures with reconfigure are artifact creatures that can be equipped onto other creatures. And when they do that, they cease to become creatures. Christian, does this remind you of anything?
Oh, does it remind me of anything? It reminds me of the coolest mechanic that caused so many rules headaches. This reminds me of Lycids from the Tempest block. So Lycids were creatures that turned into auras that they could be attached to other creatures and you could pay a mana to end the effect. And let me tell you, I think a good third of Magic rulebooks since they were created had to describe what would happen in any corner case with a Lycid.
Yeah, this is a little simpler. This reminds me a lot of Disturb from Crimson Vow or Bestow from Theros. The difference is these can be equipped multiple times to different creatures. And so I'll just read one to give an example. This is a pretty simple one. Lizard Blades is a rare. It's one and a red for a 1/1 artifact creature equipment lizard. It has double strike and then it has reconfigure for 2. So you can attach it to a creature or unattach it from a creature. And then while it's attached, it's not a creature. The equipped creature just gets double strike. Pretty simple altogether. I love that it requires you to pay the cost to unequip it because sometimes you might just want this as its own creature. So you can attack with 2 creatures instead of just 1.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that it's equipment because one of the problems with Lycids that made them terrible is that they would still die if there was like a Wrath of God effect or something on the creature, whereas this is equipment. So if a creature dies, it just turns back into a creature and then it's going to be brawling again. I like the little ingenuity that was introduced here. It's pretty great.
As just an overarching look at what we've seen so far, I really like the enchantments in mostly green and white and the artifacts in mostly the Grixis colors that are tying together that modernity and technology versus tradition. We talked about last week, we talked about that's a common theme in like Miyazaki's movies, for example. And there's even a color pair here in black and white that has a quote unquote balance theme that cares about you having both an artifact and an enchantment. So bringing those things together, I think the way that they tied that together is really flavorful and interesting. And I don't know, that seems like a victory to me.
Oh yeah. And the other thing I really like about this is I like how they do tie in the past in Neon Dynasty. Like they have the sagas, you see the same tribes, there's some call outs and specific cards for the older Kamigawa cards, but this is kind of a hard reset. So they can reference it, but it's not tied to it. I was really worried that when they went to this new Kamigawa set that they would have to ignore everything that came beforehand, or they would be so tied to the past that you couldn't get out of that either. But they kind of went a third way that I didn't expect, and it is very refreshing at how ingenious it is. They threaded that needle. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about rules changes. two rules changes that are meaningful in the set. One is vehicles can no longer crew themselves. So that makes sense both flavorfully and also there are vehicles now that have a trigger when they are crewed. And so it makes a little more sense that the vehicles can't crew themselves. You can still crew a vehicle with another vehicle. You can drive a plane with a train if you want to. The train just can't drive itself in some kind of weird folding in upon itself implosion Mobius strip.
Look, if you have to go meta, you go meta. They should have just let you go meta. I'm incensed by this rules change.
Okay, how about this one then? Once a player has been able to look at a card in exile, they can continue to look at it. This is a new change. So for example, if there's an effect that lets you look at a card and then exiles that card face down, because you've already looked at it, you're not able to look at it again. You don't have to just remember what it was.
So legitimately, what corner cases does this make it easier to play around? There's duplicity from like way back in the day with in Tempest, where you exile stuff face down.
Clone else? Shell from Scars of Mirrodin.
Yeah.
Clone Shell is 5 generic mana for a 2/2 artifact creature shapeshifter and has imprint. When it enters the battlefield, you look at the top 4 cards of your library, exile one face down, and then put the rest on the bottom. And then when it dies, you turn the exiled card face up. If it's a creature card, put it onto the battlefield under your control. So now you get to look at it, even though it's exiled face down. This is a better fix than going back and eroding the card to say, yes, you can look at it again, or you could look at it at any time. So basically, if you're allowed to see it once, you're allowed to see it again.
I'm glad they lined up to how it should be in real life. It's just, I'm surprised it took them this long. Like, I don't know.
Well, not a lot of clone shell players out there, I think.
That's true. And I just don't know what problem was trying to solve. Like, I get the vehicle thing as annoyed as I am, but okay. I'm glad that they finally tackled that exile face down issue.
Well, maybe there's a reason in an upcoming set.
Who knows? Who knows? So let's talk about reprints. We have a handful this time around. There is the life-gaining dual lands that come into play tapped, you gain a life. We'll talk about those in a second. There's only really two other notable ones, right? There's Essence Capture, blue-blue for an instant. It counters target creature spell. You put a +1/+1 counter up to one target creature you control. It fits the themes of the set. And this is also a nice reprint of a key card in Otto Brichette's Mythic Championship 1 deck, right?
Yeah. Those mono-blue aggro decks really dominated that Pro Tour, or I guess that was the first Mythic Championship, and Autumn Burchett took first place, and they played the deck masterfully, but Essence Capture was a feature of that. I like this card in Limited, too. You have a lot of creature spells. I think it's generally a challenge in that there are going to be a lot of creatures that you're going to channel, and that is not casting a spell. That's activating an ability of a card, and so counter spells will be a little worse in the Limited format, but Essence Capture is totally a fine card to reprint here.
I like it more than Essence Scatter because Essence Scatter is always a feel bad, if necessarily correct, to play in a limited deck because it's very narrow. But at least with this, it's a narrow counter spell that does pump your creatures. It has some more
upside. And it's a little harder to cast. You have to really want it.
Yeah, but it's worth it.
Another one we've got here is Thirst for Knowledge. There's 2 and a blue for an instant. It says draw 3 cards, then discard 2 cards unless you discard an artifact card. So we just got Thirst for Meaning in Theros Beyond Death. That requires you to discard an enchantment. Thirst for Discovery in Vow, discarding a basic land. And so it's nice to get the original Thirst card where you draw 3 and then discard 2 unless you discard a particular type. This is only its second mainline set printing. And the first since Mirrodin. It's been reprinted in some of the Master sets and Commander Legends and dual decks. But yeah, good to see this one back. It totally makes sense here.
Yeah, and it's surprising because this used to be a powerhouse like Vintage and Legacy card because it's draw 3 to discard 1. Like, it's a lot of value. And yeah, there's been better stuff since then, but like, it's good to just get a nice, powerful card draw spell. Like, it's not the end of the world if we have these occasionally. And
we also have Spell Pierce back again. Kindled Fury is a pretty basic combat trick. Fade into Antiquity is the one I like. 2 and a green for a sorcery that exiles an artifact or enchantment. We originally saw that in Theros, and there it was really only good for exiling an enchantment, but perfect card to bring back here. Just a much worse disenchant. Sorcery speed costs an extra mana. But really makes sense in a set where that cares about artifacts and enchantments.
This will have a lot more targets. I have a very strong feeling this is going to be not only a main deckable card in Sealed, but I could see it being a nice one or two of that you want to play in your draft decks because it hits so many targets.
Yeah, I believe it hits more than half of the creatures. And so yeah. I think it's an open question as to whether it hits the creatures you want it to hit, but it looks great to me. And then as you mentioned, the Gain Lands, Bloodfell Caves and all their friends. So they're coming here in the land slot, and I'm not sure how often we see them, one in every third or fourth pack or something. They're just not in every pack. How do we feel about putting them there in the land slot occasionally rather than just printing them at common in the set?
Wizards shouldn't be afraid of having good two or three color decks. And I think that's why they put them at a decreased rate in the land slot. I think it's fine if every pack had one of these dual lands. They're actually not very good. More often than not, it's just a nice way to help smooth your mana when you're a two-color deck. Mm-hmm. I never really wanted to play them as splash colors for three because they came into play tapped. And, you know, that's a huge liability if you have a splash that you need to play on curve or you need to play late game.
I'm pretty on the record at loving having these in every set, basically. I would love to have them here and have them one per pack because I do occasionally like a splash. And in a two-color deck, that means, you know, two out of the 10 are things that you might want. And then there's the other one that's your actual color pair that you'll always take. So that kind of fixing and smoothing is usually worth the land coming into tap for me. All right, now's the big one. Forced Obsolescence. We're going to talk about cards that make other cards obsolete. Again, as we always say, this is not about which cards are strictly better. It's about which cards make older cards totally obsolete. So the new card completely replaces the old card. It has to be the same color, the same cost or cheaper, and of the same or a better effect. So for an example, Colossal Dreadmaw, 4GG 6/6 Trample, obsoleted Crawworm, which was a 4GG 6/4. There's just no longer a reason to play Crawworm. You just don't need to do it. It's obsolete.
However, though, something like Cathartic Reunion, which is one red sorcery for which you discard two cards to draw three, doesn't obsolete Tormenting Voice, which is the same cost for a sorcery where you discard one to draw two. Cathartic Reunion is more powerful. We're not saying it's not, but it requires different resources, and there are times when you don't want to discard two cards to draw three versus discarding one to draw two.
We're also only talking about cards that newly make an old card obsolete. So like Lantern Bearer in Vow is a 1/1 flyer for a single blue mana and has that disturb ability. That is definitely strictly better than Flying Men from Arabian Nights, a 1/1 flyer for a single blue mana. But Flying Men was already made obsolete by a bunch of other single blue 1/1 flyers. And so we didn't mention it when you talked about Vow.
Yeah, finally, there's going to be some corner cases related to creature type or turning presumably negative effects like losing life into a positive, but we're not looking for the tiniest corner cases. You know, we're looking for 99% of the time, this is obsoleting another card, and we're just going to roll with it.
Sounds good. I'll kick off the first one here. We've got a card called Circuit Mender that obsoletes Filigree Familiar. Two great cards. So Circuit Mender is three generic mana for a 2/3 artifact creature insect. When it enters the battlefield, you gain 2 life. When it leaves the battlefield, you draw a card. Filigree Familiar is 3 generic mana for a 2/2 artifact creature fox. When it enters, you gain 2 life, and when it dies, you draw a card. So this is very similar, but Circuit Mender has one more toughness, and it has leaves the battlefield instead of dies. So if you return this to your hand with a ninja, I mean, that's the dream. You just draw an extra card, or if it's exiled or anything else, you still get to draw that card. So Filigree Familiar, as much as I love it, you're out.
Grafted Growth obsoletes New Horizons. So Grafted Growth is 2 and a green for an aura that enchants lands. When Grafted Growth enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature or vehicle you control. An enchanted land has tap, add 2 mana of any one color. This obsoletes New Horizons, which we originally saw back in Ixalan. The difference here is that New Horizons only put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control, not a creature or a vehicle. Grafted Growth has a little more use to it, and that's why we'll play it over New Horizons every single time.
Here's a nice one. Intercessor's Arrest obsoletes Revoke Privileges. Intercessor's Arrest, 2 and a white for an enchantment aura, enchants a permanent. The permanent can't attack, block, or crew vehicles. Its activated abilities can't be activated unless they're mana abilities. Revoke Privileges, 2 and a white aura, enchant creature. Enchanted creature can't attack, block, or crew vehicles. So Intercessor's Arrest enchants a permanent, so you could say enchant a vehicle with it. And also it blanks activated abilities that aren't mana abilities. So slightly more flexible.
I think we've probably hit the ultimate version of the Arrest effect, because this is Arrest is the original card from Arcadian Masks, but now it literally covers every single possible case of why you would activate or use a creature or a permanent, and I don't know where to go from here. So next, this is kind of a weird obsolescence. I never thought I would see it. Mirror Box obsoletes Mirror Gallery from Betrayers of Kamigawa. So Mirror Box is 3 generic for a artifact. The legend rule doesn't apply to permanents you control. Each legendary creature you control gets +1/+1. Each non-token creature you control gets +1/+1 for each other creature you control with the same name as that creature. Mirror Gallery was 5 generic for an artifact that just said the legend rule doesn't apply.
Yeah, one-sided and a bunch of possible +1/+1 stuff seems great. And cheaper. Wow.
I know people are going to say it. There is a corner case where Mirror Gallery works with your teammates. If you're playing Toyota Giant with this in play, go nuts. We don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I guess then if you want it for your teammate, but then there are two people on the other side that also get the benefit.
Yeah, no, it's a dumb corner case. Not cool. Just the stupidest corner case.
Next is Mnemonic Sphere makes Courier's Capsule obsolete. So Mnemonic Sphere is one in a blue for an artifact. You can pay one in a blue and sacrifice it to draw two cards. It also has channel for a single blue to discard it to draw a card. So basically cycling. Courier's Capsule was a common from Shards of Alara. One in a blue for an artifact. One in a blue, tap, sacrifice it to draw two cards. So you just have a little channel ability, little bonus.
The last time they did this, it was a staple blue card. This is just basically the artifact version of Hieroglyphic Illumination. And that card was ridiculously good. So don't sleep on this. This is actually quite a powerful and quite a flexible card.
Looks good to me.
The last one, Rest in Peace. It's a story beat. Tamiyo's Completion, obsolete malfunction. Tamiyo's Completion is 3 and a blue for an enchantment aura. As Flash, it can enchant an artifact, creature, or planeswalker. When Tamiyo's Completion enters the battlefield, tap enchanted permanent. If it's an equipment, unattach it. Enchanted permanent loses all abilities and doesn't untap during its controller's untap step. This obsoletes Malfunction, which you originally saw in Kaladesh, because it has more things you can enchant. You can chat to a planeswalker, and it also loses all abilities. So it's just a lot more versatile than Malfunction. Also has Flash.
Well, and if you choose an equipment, you can unattach it. So it's just like an extra bonus, and then the equipment just sits there not able to do anything. It's incredible. We've had a lot of these 3 and a blue tap something down and keep it tapped enchantments in Limited recently, and they've all kind of been underwhelming. But this one, with Flash and all of this flexibility, I think we got there.
Hopefully. We shall.
Also, terrifying art, Dominic Mayer. Way to go. Hate it. Listeners, if we missed some cards that are duly obsolete, shoot us a note. I looked through the list. I think we're in a weird place. This is officially the wordiest set ever printed, following two of the other wordiest sets ever printed. And so it's hard for these cards to make anything obsolete because they just don't relate that much to earlier cards. So I don't know. It's possible we missed something. Please call us out. We'll take it.
Absolutely. Hit us up. So let's talk about creature types. Yes, creature types. We're talking about creature types. So we don't necessarily have any new creature types, but we do have some unprecedented creature types that are finally entering Standard. Really, it's just Rabbit. So Rabbit is found on Rabbit Battery. It's red for a 1/1 artifact creature, equipment Rabbit. It has haste. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 and has haste and has reconfigure red. So yeah, it's good. We've had some eroded rabbits, like Visidrix is an eroded rabbit. Jackalope Herd is an eroded rabbit. But this is the second ever card that has the card type Rabbit printed on it. The last one was in Commander Legends. It was a blue-white legend that was a rabbit wizard.
Yeah, Quain Itinerant Meddler. People were very excited because they're like, whoa, it's an actual rabbit. And the other ones we've seen are mostly horrifying. I'll also note this is the first red rabbit. Red Rabbit being a nice casual Italian eatery here in the Twin Cities. Two locations, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Highly recommended.
Is it like Red Robin?
It is very much not like Red Robin.
In any way. Okay, good to know.
And we already talked about Shrines, not a creature type. We just now have all these cards that are, as I mentioned, like Nameless Race and don't have creature types. We have no errata to old creatures. So let's talk about some notable type combinations. We have a bunch more non-human ninjas.
Oh, yeah. We have like fox ninjas, snake ninjas, but insect ninjas. But really, let's talk about the biggest call-out references to probably our childhood. We have a rat ninja and a turtle ninja. What is this actually referencing?
I mean, obviously, this is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And we've had rat ninjas in the past, but there's like a leader rat ninja in this set to go with the turtle ninjas. So some nice animal diversity for who can be a ninja.
We talked about equipment creatures earlier. I think the most ridiculous of the equipment creatures has to be the reality chip. It's not only an equipment jellyfish. It's a legendary artifact creature equipment jellyfish. It's like an honorary Senate card.
They really blew out their budget on the type line for that one. That text is so small. It's a total Asmore situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is definitely a smaller text than they normally have for the creature types. So, you know, I'm glad that their solution this time was like, can it go to 6-point font?
Yes. I'm almost surprised they didn't create a symbol that just means legendary for some of these cards because it got so ridiculous and small. We have a bunch of new types of samurai. The previous block had only humans, rats, foxes, and ogres. So now basically anybody can be a samurai. I wanted to specifically highlight Dockside Chef, which is only our third citizen card, sitting there with his delicious-looking bowl of ramen, although it does have an eyeball in it, which is a little sketchy. But he is the first human citizen. And I don't know about you. I'm just awaiting a larger creature type update on some old cards. There have to be more things that are citizens out there, right?
Here's the thing. If we're adding citizens to Magic, does that imply that every soldier is part of some military organization that exists separately from the citizens? Is there like a Magic DoD that we're just missing here?
No, I think soldiers are different. You know, it's a different class. I'm talking like we had Prosperous Innkeeper that was a citizen, but Edgewall Innkeeper before that was a peasant. And then we have Oak Street Innkeeper and Stencia Innkeeper, but they're just an elf and a vampire. So are we getting a citizen type update at some point? Are they going to be peasants? I don't know. I feel like this must be coming at some point.
I agree with that. I also wonder, does that mean we're going to get passports in Magic? Because if you're a citizen, what are you a citizen of? It's a good question.
You're a citizen of, you know, your plane, your state within your plane. There are a million opportunities to flesh that out. There should be a lot of people on Ravnica who are just citizens. Let's be clear.
That's true. Absolutely true. Lastly, would that mean that if you targeted the wrong citizen with, like, assassinate or murder, does that mean you committed a war crime?
That is possible. You'd at least create some kind of international or interplanar incident. So you might not want to do that. Jace is going to come after you and be like, I have all the rules in my big book of rules because I'm Jace. I'm the Guild Pact. So that's my Jace voice. It's very accurate.
That means we're going to get the Ravnica conventions next time we go to Ravnica. That'll be a literal equipment. The Ravnica conventions.
Bring it. I'm ready. Finally, we have some Fox pilots, and I choose to believe both of them are Star Fox. That's all I'm saying. Next set, we're probably going to get a blue hedgehog with haste, and we're just making all kinds of video game references from here on out.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get a frog pilot, and we're going to be like, Skippy, no! And they're going to be like, the young kids are going to be like, who's Skippy? And then we're just going to feel very, very old.
Given some of the names and the meme references in this set, like the giant energy sword and the you are already dead, if we get a frog pilot and a card that says dual barrel roll, I'll actually be happy about it.
Let's talk about the most extensive part of our podcast. We're going to try to go quickly through this one. Tokens. There's so many unique tokens in this set.
Yeah, what is the deal? Normally we're just like, oh, obviously there's a 1-1 human and a 1-1 spirit, a 2-2 zombie and a 2-2 wolf, but we blew it out on Kamigawa. Do you want to speed read this?
Yeah, and I'll say for the record, when I put this list together, I didn't include reprints. So, like, they have colorless 1-1 tokens, which I'll mention. That was already in the original Kamigawa. Not notable. But let's talk about the cool tokens. We got pilots. They're 1-1 colorless creatures that can crew 3 or lower, basically.
Samurai tokens. 2-2 white creatures with vigilance.
Green human monks that are 1-1s. They're basically Llanowar elves.
Goblin shamans. 2-2 red creatures that make a treasure when they attack. Sign me up.
Thanks, Kiki Cheeky. A red spirit that has a 2-2 with menace from one card.
Yeah, we've seen 5-5 flying dragons, but not dragon spirits.
Spiritually, I'm there. We also have a spirit that's a 4-5, and it's green, and it can get some sort of ability because it's on Evoke the Agents. So you're going to get Trample or Vigilance or whatever that does. I can't remember right now.
Sounds good. 1-1 blue ninja tokens from Kaido Shizuki.
I didn't remember that in the story. We have XX green spirits from Kura, the Boundless Sky.
We've got a 10-10 construct creature token with flying, vigilance, trample, lifelink, and haste. That's actually all colors.
It's the Mech Titan Core. We have 1-1 constructs and 3-1 constructs. The 1-1 constructs are from Oni Cult Anvil. The 3-1 constructs are from Sokinzan Smelter.
We've got Kaimi. He's a legendary 3-3 black and green frog creature that has, whenever you cast an enchantment spell, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. And I just want to say one thing about this card. This is one of my favorite cards in the set because the flavor is incredible. It's on Tetsunari Toad Rider. who is 2 and a black for a 3/3 legendary human ninja. And when you cast an enchantment spell, if you don't control a creature named Kiimi, then you create him. And then he has an activated ability that's 1 and a Simic hybrid. So you can pay 1 and a green or 1 and a blue. And it says Tatsunari Toad Rider and target frog you control can't be blocked this turn except by creatures with flying or reach. But note, you can't do this ability unless you're also targeting a frog you control, because he's hopping. He's riding the toad and he's hopping in the air, which is why he can't be blocked except for creatures with flying and reach. And I love it. I want to make Kiimi.
Yeah, Kiimi is also fantastic in the art. It, like the Gitrog, its tongue is just flying out, and it's now my favorite toad of all time.
Big gross frogs and toads. Let's do it.
Yes. Lastly, if that wasn't enough, we have Retrogues. That's right. Retrogues. They're 1/1 and black, and you find them on Tribute to Hirobi.
Retrogue. Retrogue. All right, a little Scooby-Doo for you there. Let's talk about counters, if Christian can survive. There are lots of +1/+1 counters because of the modified theme. There are lore counters and sagas and a couple of things with charge counters. Those are normal. I just want to highlight that ability counters are back. There are 4 cards with ability counters. Thank you, Ikoria, for bringing us those. I think those are super cool. I love that modified creatures count ability counters as modified. And then one unique counter we've never seen before from this rare saga, the Dragon Kami Reborn, you put hatching counters on creatures that are face down. So totally unique. All right, special frames in the set. Christian, what do we think? Let's start with the woodblock-inspired lands.
I really love them. If I had all the money in the world, I would get a play set of each of these. These are probably now my favorite lands they've ever released. I know they kind of just do this now. It's a thing. But legitimately, this is the first set of lands they've done in a long time where I'm like, these are absolutely gorgeous, and I would love to have enough to be able to draft with
them. Yeah, these are really beautiful. I think everybody is pretty on board with them. So that's good. But alternate frames, there are a lot of alternate frames right now.
Too many, and I accidentally ordered some showcase cards, and I shouldn't have. Meh.
Yeah, I'm fine with a ton of ninja and the samurai frames, but the soft glow frame doesn't really do anything for me. It just says a lot to me that what I prefer over all of these is just the borderless versions, like the ones of the rares. I like that a lot better.
Yeah, they really do the best things, the borderless versions. And I kind of hate to say it. Like, I know they're trying to appeal to a bigger audience with all these different alternate frames. I think the pendulum has swung too far in that way. Do we really need to have one card in Hidegetsu that has a special neon ink treatment that you can only find in one set of borders? Not really. I mean, yeah, people are going to try to find it, but like, is there anyone really clamoring for this?
See, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the super wild chase cards where the collector who really wants that is going to chase after it. You've won the lottery if you open one. Congratulations. But if everything is special, nothing is special, is kind of the way I look at it. These all just blend together. They don't look very special to me.
No. I hate to say it, too. We keep saying this every single time we talk about this. They really knocked it out of the park with Eldraine. That was still the best version of these they've ever done. And they've been kind of chasing that high since then, and I don't think they've really reached it.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, well, now it's time for the nonsense, the secret reach card, Christian. So, as you know, a lot of sets feature creatures that, for some reason, nobody notices have reach and willingly attack their flyers right into. Recent examples include one I certainly fell victim to in Crimson Vow, Halana and Elena Partners, Dryder in Adventures of the Forgotten Realms. So, Christian, what is the secret reach card of this set?
So my choice is Beside You Reaches Skyward. This is 3 green for a saga. It's a flip saga. The first chapter on the front half is search your library for 2 basic forest cards, reveal them, put them into your hand, then shuffle. The second chapter is put up to 1 target land card from your graveyard instead of your library. And then this is where we get to the reach. When you exile it and flip it over, the back half is an enchantment creature plant that has reach and gets +1/+1 for each land you control. The fact that the reach is on the back means people are really going to forget about it. And when you flip it, you're not going to really notice or care that it has reach until you attack into it.
Yeah, that totally makes sense to me. People are definitely going to think it has trample or something, or just not even notice and be like, oh, you've got an 8/8, cool. And then attack their 1/1 into it, and they're trying to kill you. For me, it's definitely Twin Shot Sniper, primarily because it's red. It's 3 and a red for a 2/3 artifact creature Goblin Archer. It has reach. When it enters the battlefield, it deals 2 damage to any target. You can also channel it for 1 and a red and discard it, and it deals 2 damage to any target. I think the only thing that will save you from attacking your small flyers into this is that when it enters, it's going to do that 2 damage to your small flyer. It's also a goblin. There's only one other goblin in Magic history with reach. So despite the fact that he's got a big bow in the art, I think people are just going to run right into this bad boy.
And also, funny enough, it's the second goblin archer of all time. So very rare thing indeed. But I agree with you on that.
If I recall correctly, and I have not looked this up, I believe the other goblin archer has first strike instead. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. It is from Oath of the Gatewatch.
Nice. All right. Tongue Twister. Inspired by our favorite magic tongue twister, Click Slither, Quick Sliver. Man, this whole set. I don't know, Wizards, what are you doing? There are so many tongue twisters in this set. I'm just going to say all of them once, and then maybe we can pick. Okay, so there's Banishing Slash, Blade Blizzard Kitsune, Imperial Subduer, Jingataxius Progress Tyrant, Moonsnare Specialist, Nashi Moonsage Scion, Shigeki Jukai Visionary, Sky Swimmer Koi, Tawashi Songshaper, and Voltage Surge. Now, those sound pretty normal when I say them one time. If you try to do them three times fast, five times fast, you're not getting there. It's just not happening.
My vote, the entire set. This entire set's a tongue twister. That's my vote.
I'm going to have to do some Twitter polling, I think. I'm kind of between Banishing Slash and Sky Swimmer Koi, but I want to give the people some examples. And so I'll run some polls after this comes out, and we'll make a determination. But there are just a lot of choices. Listeners, please try them out. We're not even going to do it here because I don't want you to hear how bad it sounds.
Oh, just awful. I tried this, listeners. I got two cards in, and I threw in the towel. And, that's how I play.
All right, finally, we have a suggestion from our listener, Camilla, who said it might be fun to hear something like one common, one uncommon, and one rare you think are well-designed, exemplify the set, or excite you one way or another. And so we've added this to all of our fact shows. I'll start with a common. There are so many I like here. I love these common channel cards that are modal in exactly the way you want them. I'm just going to use Sunblade Samurai as an example. 4 and a white for a 4/4 enchantment creature human samurai with vigilance. So maybe a little below rate, but still like a pretty big creature, especially in white. But has channel for 2 generic mana. Discard it, search your library for a basic planes card, reveal it, put it into your hand, and then shuffle, and you gain 2 life. So if you don't have the 5 mana for your 4/4 vigilance, you just get to get a planes. So you'll get that mana, and you gain a little life to make up for, you know, the tempo loss of just getting a land and putting it in your hand. I love it. I love it. I will plan on playing this card for sure.
Oh, yeah. It's a fantastic white common. Probably one of the better white commons in set, to be honest. I'm not going to go for necessary playability here. I'm going to pick Ambitious Assault. So I'll just describe the card real quick. It's basically 2 and a red for an instant. Creatures you control get +2/+0 until end of turn. If you control a modified creature, draw a card. So it's a cantrip, trumpet blast effect. I really thought it might have obsoleted some, but there's the one from AFR that makes goblins, so not here there. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about this card, though. This is my favorite, because in the art, in the flavor text, they reference fire frogs that the Aki are wearing on their head. And that is just the coolest thing in the world, and I love the fire frogs. Team Fire Frog. I'm picking this card every time I can, just so I can have all the fire frogs in the world.
No, those are just fire frogs on their heads. Yeah, I mean, Trumpet Blast with Set's mechanic is another thing that we've done, and this is definitely that, but the fire frogs.
Fire frogs? No, I think it's just cool as hell. Those fire frogs
Are kind of scaly heads, so maybe it's fine
for them. They just go, brah, and then fire. Love it.
How about an uncommon for you, Christian?
I'm going to pick Colossal Sky Turtle. I like both effects on it. I'll read this card. It's 4 green-green-blue for an enchantment creature turtle. It has Flying Ward 2. It has 2 channel abilities. The first channel ability is 2 and a green. Return target card from your graveyard to your hand. The second channel ability is return target creature to its owner's hand. And it's a 6/5. It's super flexible. It can be a regrowth and a disperse. Or I guess a more expensive unsummon, or just a big, dumb 6/5 flyer. Like, I love all of this. The flavor's great. Really just an absolutely fantastic out-of-the-park card.
Yeah, this card's amazing, and it would have been my pick. I mean, you just would put as many of these as you could in your deck because the flexibility is so strong. This isn't even a card. This is a charm. It just so happens that one of the choices is a 6/5 Ward 2 flyer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you can play in your green deck or your blue deck without having to play the other half. Like, I would play an uncounterable regrowth or an uncounterable unsummon, you know? So what about you? What's your choice for uncommon?
All the cards I considered here are basically also modal cards. Man, the modal cube I've been working on is going to get so nice with this set. I'm going with Gravelighter. Gravelighter is 2 and a black for a 2-2 spirit with flying, and it says when Gravelighter enters the battlefield, draw a card if a creature died this turn. Otherwise, each player sacrifices a creature. So I'm not mad at a Fleshbag Marauder. You can get value out of that. But now you're telling me that it's not a 3-1. This is a Windrake. It's a 2-2 flyer for 3. And I can orchestrate a way to get a card out of it if I don't want to work with a sacrifice. Like, if I could just chump attack something, I can just play this and draw a card, and it's a Windrake. This card seems out of control to me. I love it.
It's kind of weird this is black. I mean, I get why it's black, because it has the whole Fleshbag Marauder and Death Trigger thing going for it. But, like, it's weird to see a 2-2 flyer in black that's just non-conditional. You basically are going to get a good 2-2 flyer no matter what.
Yeah, this seems like it should also say it can't block or something. I totally agree with you. It's a little pushed on that angle.
But still great. I love this card too. Yeah. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
A rare for me, this is an easy Satoru Umezawa. This is 1 blue-black for a 2/4 legendary human ninja. It says whenever you activate a ninjutsu ability, look at the top 3 cards of your library, put one into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. This ability triggers only once each turn. And it says each creature card in your hand has ninjutsu 2 blue-black. I mean, I love ninjutsu. I love Dimir decks that get to attack. And this just says you have to block all of my creatures at all times, because everything in my hand could just be anything. It's also just a 3-mana 2/4. And one of the best parts of it is this is the Buy a Box promo in a super, super gorgeous borderless version, which I am told by my local LGS looks incredible in person. And so, you know, can't go wrong.
It's a great choice. And it's also one of those things where it's not going to be a standard powerhouse. It might see some niche play in modern, but really it's just a nice commander card. And who doesn't like nice commander cards that are not named Nexus of Fate? Who doesn't?
It's just, it's so cool. So cool. All right. What's your rare?
So my choice is Tamishii, Reality Architect. Tamishii, Reality Architect is 2 blue for a legendary creature, Moonfolk Wizard. Whenever one or more non-creature permanents are returned to hand, draw a card. This ability triggers only once each turn. Then you could pay X and a white for in return a land you control to its owner's hand, return target artifact or enchantment card with a mana value X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, activate only as a sorcery. It's also 2/3. This just is combo written all over it. This is combos and combos and more combos. And it also returns your Urza Sagas from your graveyard to your hand for 1 white and a land drop. Ugh. I don't care. You're getting an Urza Saga. Mwah! Love it. Mwah!
Yeah, that's really good. All right. Yes. Well, this definitely seems like a Christian level card. So it makes a lot of sense. So that is our fact show for Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. There's a lot to digest. I'm looking forward to getting the cards in my hand. Before we go, Christian has something he wants to talk about today. This is normally my territory, but here we go. What do you got?
Yeah, I thought of a great idea that Wizards should do, and absolutely they can steal my idea. I don't care. You don't have to pay me. I would love to see at the end of every quote-unquote year in Magic, so that's the end of every summer, basically, when the last set for the year comes out, it'd be nice to get a sealed cube product that highlights the best cards of the last, you know, 6 or 8, however many standard sets, and put it in one box. So you can have this nice limited environment that's this uber limited environment. It's just the best cards of the last 2 years that you can purchase for however much money and play with your friends. It's this nice little token, this keepsake, this memory of the limited formats that you just left and are about to start a new year on. I think it'd be a great idea. I would buy it.
So you're looking basically for a playable cube of a standard.
Yeah, standard cube.
Okay.
Like
360 cards?
360 cards.
What are you thinking for price point on this?
150, 200, I don't know. Who knows?
Okay.
A price point.
Is this like with the regular cards? Is this like a gold bordered version, like the old World Championship decks? How are you envisioning that working?
It could be regular if you want to make it gold bordered so it's cheaper. Whatever. Like, I would just be nice to have this curated keepsake that's also a fantastic product you can play with your friends, that's not complicated like a legacy cube or a vintage cube, and it doesn't require the same amount of work and effort in creating your own cube, right? Like, that's the one thing. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of thought, and it's fantastic that's a lot of work and a lot of thought to create your own cube, but it'd be nice to have something you could just pull out that's just not boosters you're pulling open, right? Like, it's something that you can replay over and over and go back, you know, in a year or two and relive those limited formats a little bit, but, you know, relive the cards that you actually remember and not the draft chaff that is the bulk of a lot of Magic sets.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see the curation. As you know, I really like cubes that try to simulate, if not an exact limited environment, this certainly wouldn't be that, limited play, where you're not, you know, blowing at the roof with some of the most powerful cards that were there for constructed that maybe don't fit into a limited environment, but you still have a reasonable amount of power. And then you have all those glue commons and uncommons that make different archetypes work. And we generally see enough overlap between sets. When you see a green-black in a set, chances are it has something to do with a graveyard, for example. And so a lot of those cards will work together pretty well. Kind of like a standard chaos draft, I suppose. I could see that. It was a product I'd be interested in. I love cubes, so yeah.
Yeah. Please steal my idea. Because I just think it's one of those things where summers are usually dead times anyway. And if I had my choice, I would love to go down to my local game store, give them $150, $200 for this product that I could play for 3 months and then be able to pick up again on a nice weekend with friends, right? Like, why not? And the cards already exist. I don't know. I don't see the downsides because I refuse to see the downsides.
That sounds good to me. All right. I would be in for it. So go ahead and pitch that up and let's see where we get. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter at our handle at MemoryJarMTG. We would love your feedback, and please tell us what cards you want to remember. I'm going to pitch this again. I'm going to keep pitching it. If you haven't checked out the Magic Card Dictionary, please visit us on Twitter and check it out. It is currently our website link on our Twitter profile, and it is a link to a dictionary of terms used for types of cards and non-keyworded abilities. We want your feedback on it. We've already added a ton of listener suggestions, and we would love to continue fleshing this out. So give it a peek.
Yeah, please check it out. I think I have to make sure Falter is on there. We talked about that earlier, and it might not meet the final cut, but there's some stuff we got to add. We also want to thank Chris Yates for the logo. We greatly appreciate it. You can find Chris on Twitter at CMY Company. That's company with a K. He's a great graphic designer, so reach out to him if you need any graphic design support. And until next time, make sure you move silently like ninjas, are honorable as samurais, and whatever you do, don't equip the jellyfish. Don't do it. Just, that's going to not work out for you. Have a fantastic time playing Neon Dynasty, and we will see you next time.